You're listening to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast from Misadventures of an Adoptive Dad.
Good evening. Welcome to episode 24 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. Hello, Al.
Hello, Scotty. How are you?
Scotty, you're just copying a certain name, aren't you?
I am.
Bugger. You've been saving that one up all day, I can tell. I can just tell by your face.
I'm so embarrassed. God.
Just for those that don't know what he's going on about, I obviously I'm organising a rather large conference this year, and there's a few familiar faces from... Well, what would you call it? I wouldn't like to call them famous faces because I don't know if they'd appreciate me being called that, but they're well-known faces, let's say. And Tessa Sanderson is one of them. And right. I got an email from her yesterday and it said, "Hi, Scotty." So, of course, I just thought that was quite humorous. So I posted on Facebook on my personal page. And, of course, Al thought that was quite funny. So there you go.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
So now, from now on, you're calling us Scotty.
Yeah, well, that's what most people call me anyway, to
is
be
it?
Fair. So,
oh,
well, yeah, it's, yeah. So, anyway, so episode 24.
Yes.
We've decided we're going to talk about transitions given the week ahead or the week that's just begun for some, actually, because I know of some schools that have gone back today.
Yeah, Scotland, Scottish schools have gone back way.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And I struggle with that because obviously being brought up in Scotland, I still struggle with school holidays in summer because I'm used to the Scottish school holidays, not the English ones. So I get a bit confused around summertime.
It must have been hard when you were held back in primary for all those years.
I just know that you're going to post that. You are definitely, I just know you're going to post
that. That'll be a podcast extra, so please listen after the credits. And there's some, it's jips and tomfoolery and wit and banter.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, we do put some extras on the end sometimes. So we know if you listen or not.
That's
anyway,
true.
So welcome to our two listeners, or two stalkers, should I say. So that's Laurie and Glitter Stalker, we've decided to call her.
Yeah,
we've nicknamed her now. But anyway, we're going to talk about transitions tonight.
We should, we should really get cut to the chase.
We should, but not just school transitions, is it? Because we've had a few questions, haven't we?
We have had loads and loads
of questions. We have had quite a few, actually. I'm really surprised how many we've had.
Are you? Are you surprised at the questions, or are you surprised that people have bothered to interact with us?
Well, I think it's because we've only got three listeners that we know of, you know.
Well, there's my mum and your mum.
No, my mum, I told you this already on Twitter. My mum doesn't even know how to use Facebook, so the chats have been downloaded. No. Bless her. She's still
700 followers on Twitter.
No.
She has.
Oh, my God. Wow. See, my mum doesn't even know what a mobile... Well, she knows what a mobile phone is, but she doesn't realise that it's mobile, so you can actually take it out of the house. She still thinks it's connected to something in the house.
She's slightly intrigued that you know where she is when you
call. Yeah, exactly.
How did you know I was
exactly.
here?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's crack on because people will be getting very bored of this banter.
And we've had several minutes already. 4 minutes of banter.
Yeah, rubbish. Yeah.
Rubbish. High quality banter. Banter gold.
Yeah. So I guess with transitions, obviously school is a big one. And I mean, I and you actually we're just about to go into high school transitions, aren't we? Next week. And I don't know how you're getting on with it. I'm playing it down big styly at home. We discuss it, but we don't discuss it too much because I don't want a big kind of...
Well, is that a clear strategy that actually ignorance is bliss?
I don't know. I don't know that it is. I think it's because it's going to come... There is going to reach a point where it's going to kick off. I know it is. I just know
right.
Hence the reason I'm in a hotel tonight for the last time until school goes back.
You just leave. Just go.
Peace and quiet.
So what we've got from transitions already is that actually what to do is to avoid the situation and run away.
Yeah, run away to a hotel, get a glass of wine and speak to Al.
This is social care gold, this is.
It is. But, I mean, I've got the double whammy this week of being a single parent while he goes back to school as well. I think that's kind of why. Until Tris leaves tomorrow night for his 2 weeks away, sunning himself in Thailand, I think that's why I've kind of put it on the back burner. But when I think back to the older two's transitions to high school, I can't actually recall how traumatic that was, but it must have been, and I think that's probably why I've blocked it out.
But it just doesn't have to be necessarily traumatic. I mean, I think the thing I would, the caveat to everything that we say is that all children are different.
Of course, yeah.
And obviously there's themes and ideas, but yeah, I mean, Lottie is going up to high school next week and she's actually totally cool with that. But Lottie's a different child.
Yeah, but Lottie is, yeah. And I haven't met Lottie now. She's probably like the most normal out of the eight of you, actually.
It's immense that holds us all together. I think the thing that because I'm reflecting, this would be our fourth transition up to high school. And actually, they're all very different. And I was thinking about this today, and I was thinking about Selwyn, Selwyn's report, who broke it down into thirds, you know, a third of children who are really challenging, third who are moderately challenging, third who are not. And two of my children found it really easy. But actually with Lottie, she just totally gets it. She went through the process and it's just fairly normal for her. She's totally cool and will have, no doubt, have a wobble or two the weekend before.
Of course. Well, that's to be expected. Yeah. I recall that myself.
Yeah. I mean, showing my age now, I can remember the deep anxiety I had over wearing a blazer for the first time. I knew a few people, but not a lot. And I think that plays out in our children in extreme, doesn't it? So you're thinking about Jacob for you. It's a big deal, isn't it? It's a huge deal.
Yeah, it's especially the work we've had to do to find a high school that fits his needs, essentially. Because that has really not been easy. Bearing in mind, we literally live 100 yards from, you know, the local high school, but we're having to do a 12-mile round trip twice a day.
Can I ask you then about that? Because I've got a friend who just recently transitioned a young person, their foster carer. And they started like a year in advance. And with Jacob, did you sort of say, right, actually, this is inevitable. This is going to happen. How involved were you in that kind of choice over schools for him?
Yeah.
How involved was he? Sorry.
How involved was he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I heavily involved because we were very honest with him from the start. And we started at the midpoint of year five.
So the year before.
Yeah. And when we started looking, he obviously came along with and we kind of fed him information about each of the schools. So all of his interests, because he's into drama, surprise.
Really?
You'd never know from meeting him, would you? It's not biological either, which is,
fantastic matching by social workers.
Exactly, they were amazing. But no, in seriousness, we tried to look at places that would fit his interests as well as his needs in terms of, you know, how they would deal with certain behaviours, how they would deal with him, you know, bunking out of the school, you know, so like even security came into it, you know, so like how many doors are between him and the main road if he escaped from the class? And when I say escape, that's exactly what I mean. So it was all discussed with him. He knows, and I think that's what we've learned actually. But bearing in mind, he is very mature for his years as well. He knows a lot of big words. I'm not going to tell him that.
But he's self-aware. There's a level of self-awareness, isn't there, about him?
Hugely, massively,
How he will respond or how what will happen when his buttons are pressed.
Exactly. And I don't know where that comes from. I love that it's there in some ways, because actually he's been really aware of this process from the very beginning, because he knows that we had to go for a school that actually he would succeed in as much as possible. And whether that's one GCSE or no GCSEs, what I mean is that actually that he sees his school career through because he loves school.
Yeah.
And to you know, I know that there's a lot of homeschoolers and what have you out there, and I love the fact that we've got such diversity when it comes to education. But homeschool would not fit with Jacob. It wouldn't fit with us as a family.
That's the first.
And secondly, he would hate it. He would absolutely detest it because he loves school. So we had to find a school that was going to deal with his needs and his needs for kind of is interest. But as well as that, then the transition phase up to going to that. And I guess the difference was that because he's not going to a local high school, the primary school was geared up to do the transitions to the local high school, so he had to get involved in that as well. And that was where our issues came, because he started to kind of get a little bit of a kind of an issue about the fact that he wasn't going to the local high school.
Beyond that, friends are going off on these planned transition days, and even if it's
exactly
here and there. But even the fact that you kind of involved him from the, I suppose, year five, you've said this is going to happen, and you've actively involved him. That you need, the transition has been very slow. You've drip fed that, but that doesn't change the fact today he's anxious.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And he's had to do homework for school with some as well. Which hasn't
we had that for flossing, and we just thought, we're going to fall at the first hurdle.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. We were very honest from school. I mean, I did a blog about it, and the blog photograph was a rule book being ripped up, because the school literally said, there's no point in us putting these rules in place for Jacob, because he's not going to be able to follow them. And at, it was that point we thought, yes, we have made the correct decision.
Yeah.
Because you are correct. You're bang on. You've got him. You've got us. Because I don't want to go through another 5-6 years of getting phone calls every day, going to school every day, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's...
Yeah.
Yes, I'll have to do it. Of course I'll have to do it, because there will come times where it has to be done. But I want his education in high school to be as normal as possible as it can be for him. End of story. Regardless of what he comes out with at the other end.
Yeah, I mean, I was slightly off topic, but I kind of think that my idea of success is that Flossie isn't criminalised or fallen into that penalised element of school, that she just survives. She can get her GCSEs when she's 25.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, God, you know, look at you with your social work thing. You know, that was as an adult you got that. You didn't go to university at 19 and get that. You had life experience.
I feel like you're digging a hole for me.
No, well, but I'm the same. You know, I've got minimal amount of qualifications, and yet, you know, people tell me I do a job that's quite important. So,
I've heard you're in charge of photocopying down there.
Exactly, yeah. And keeping the tuck money as
tuck
well.
Money. And so, I mean, in that case, we're talking about like preparation, because we did exactly the same with Flossie, and that we tried to involve her. And she actually chose the school we wanted her to choose, but we generated that.
Yeah.
And then we did what you did over the summer, in that we kind of just put it to bed. Distracted, mirrors, smoke, because actually I knew that it would be 6 weeks of incredible anxiety that she could never resolve. And I think that's one of the, no one specifically said that, but for me, I think transitions that you can't resolve are hellish for anyone. And certainty, we all want certainty in every aspect of our lives, don't we? I mean, you know, we want to know, what will it feel like? What will the people be like? And those are the questions that you can't answer for a child. So they're coming to you and they're going, what if? And those anxiety is a bottomless pit for some of our children, that, you know, you can pour in as many words as you want, but you will never be able to fill that. I had a few, I was going to look at a few questions.
Yes.
And I thought, let me see. There's a few people. One of the questions people were saying was, often that people struggle because they know what school they're going to, they know the name of the class, but they don't know the teacher. Which I think is, I understand, or you don't find out the name of the teacher until maybe the last day, or which is a real challenge. Even that, even from year to year, that happens within a school.
It does.
Is that something you've experienced? What your, come on, Scott, give us some advice. You work charity.
every year and do you know what, it's funny, because it's the same with all three boys, and it's I feel really bad for saying this, the previous head teacher, because she retired a couple of years ago, she explained to us why she did that one day, and she said it was because actually there's still politics that goes on in the schools about where
the last day
where teachers are placed and where TA or learning support assistants are placed. And the reason that they leave it so late is because of those politics. And I think that's really interesting. I would be interested to know if that's the same in every school. I suspect, there might have been a little bit of kind of yeah, a little bit of kind of what's his name, rubbish spewed on that one. But I would believe that, actually, because, you know, working in retail for a number of years, I can see why that would be the case.
But yeah, people are people, wherever you go, people are,
exactly, you know, they are, yeah. Yeah, and, you know,
how do
you guys,
children in that? How do you
well, exactly, that's it, that's it. And I think that what has helped us is probably knowing the school has helped us, because we know generally, and it does change, of course it does change, but generally, if you know the school quite well and you've got a good relationship with the school, you probably know the teacher of the year, four teacher of the year, five teacher. Obviously, it does change. It really does. And yeah. I get that. But, this, you know, definitely with the school that we've had, we've only had one or two changes in terms of where teachers are placed in terms of year groups. So actually, the teaching staff have really, you know, it's been predictable where they might fall. And it didn't for Jacob in year six, because we assumed, and we assumed incorrectly. So, you know, we had a bit of preparations to do with that. And we had, you know, we had a year where Jacob did not want that teacher. I mean, he came home and we opened the envelope and it's like, it's almost like the X Factor, you know, the final. But yeah, exactly. Or the loser in this case. And we said to him, well, your teacher's going to be Miss De. And he just burst into tears. He went, she won't be able to deal with me. So,
self-awareness.
Isn't it just? But actually, she was probably the best teacher he had in that school, because she wasn't with him. So, yeah, it's a really tricky one, because they do leave it to the... well, in my eyes, I think I would agree with whoever asked that question that they do leave it to the last minute. I think they leave it to the last minute for good reason. And I think that actually, if you can, I mean, we ended up, you know, going to our teachers and saying, look, you can't keep doing this to us. You can't keep on, you know, just, yeah, exactly. So just give us kind of two names that you think it might be, and we will start to drip that information in.
Yeah.
Rather than saying that your teacher will be, it's just a case of, oh, well, you know, maybe the teachers for this year will be there. And you know, kind of getting them to notice them, and, you know, when they're in school and stuff like that. I think that potentially can really help. But that will only help if you've got an approachable head teacher, I guess.
I think, I think as adopters, we've got one of our key skills, which should be on preparation, is building relationships with school. Mm-hmm. You've got to find some warm bodies in there who you can build a relationship with and work with.
Yeah.
And I think, like you, I think the question sort of hints at that frustration of you, everyone's waiting on tenterhooks, and you get the news, then you're all broke up for the summer, and you've got that. I think it is, you've got to do your best, really, and try and, if you can, in that short period, even pre-warn the school and say, look, even, I know you won't release it till the last week or last couple of days, but could we just schedule a 10-minute conversation with that teacher, or just a 10-minute introduction?
Yeah.
If the child doesn't know them, or just 10 minutes for the teacher to shake them by the hand and say, I'm really looking forward.
Exactly.
You know, and that could be the difference between a summer of hell or a summer of a normal summer, which, you know, who knows what we're going to get.
And I think that what helps as well is that some of the teachers actually do the kind of after school clubs and things like that. And I know it's not always possible for our children to attend some of these clubs, I get that. But actually, when I think about certainly Jacob's experience, because that's more recent, he has been involved with more of the teachers through after school clubs in primary school. And that's really helped him to transition into the next year group. What's also helped him was the first 2 years he was in the same classroom. Sorry, the first 3 years, because he started in year three at our local school, and then he did year four and year five in the same classroom. That's not always the case, but that really helped him. And year six was the one... Yeah, and year six was, I think they did that on purpose. In year six, they actually moved to classrooms so that they got used to kind of being in a new environment. Because obviously at high school, you're in a different class every 50 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is, whatever the timetable is.
I mean, you touched on another issue there. I mean, the difference between primary and high is that in primary, the transitions are fairly... I know that a lot of children struggle that transition from home to school, from school to playground to back to class to...
Yeah.
And it's a series of transitions.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a few people hinted at that. about, you know, how do we help our children? And there was a good few comments coming up, unfortunately, I can't remember who said them, but kind of giving children, even just, I know we used to give Flossie a stone, like Paula has like some hard-shaped stones around the house, and she would give her one, or something in her pocket. And the idea of children being able to think or understand or feel that their presence, there's a parental presence throughout those transitions. I mean, I think that it comes down to knowing your child, doesn't it? You've got.
It does, yeah. And not scared to show that you know your child. If you know, maybe if they're going from maths to geography, say it's high school, if they're going from maths to geography, not being scared to kind of, you know, like they bring their books home, you know, put a little note in there, put a little sticky. And it doesn't have to be the biggest sticky in the world. It just needs to be a little smiley face sticky. So you don't need to put a full paragraph. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I think actually I've gotten into a lot of trouble. Yeah.
Different sort of problems.
But, you know, just little things, little symbols, like you say about the heart-shaped stone. Now, that's brilliant. You know, I don't think I could send Jacob to school with a stone, because I think we'd probably end up with a bill for a glazier. But things like that, we know our children. I don't think we should be scared to use that knowledge to get those messages within, you know, what they're doing. And, you know, I get, and, you know, I constantly bang on about it, hence the reason we're doing a bloody conference on education this year. But, you know, there's a lot of schools who don't get this. There is. But if you've got a school that gets it, then go in and tell them what you're going to do so that they can support it. Because actually, they're the best advocates for this kind of work. You've got them on side. You really are.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then, you know, send them my way, and I'll definitely.
Yeah. I mean, I think that as well. I think I do a little bit of teaching in schools and a bit of education. I know.
No.
I know I do.
Oh, God.
Just a little bit of one of the many strings to my bow. And often I talk to teachers and say, you know, when our children are their most challenging, and they'll say, oh, before break, after break, you know, pretty classic. And you say, right, okay, well, I think all children struggle with change. We all do. I struggle with change, you know. And I think it's for us, for our children, who perhaps their sense of self and their sense of is the world a safe place? You know, that idea of an internal working model, their experience is the world is not a safe place, or adults are not safe, or adults cannot be trusted. We're saying, or trust the teacher, or trust me that I'll be there at the end of the day. And so all those transitions become then infused with this kind of anxiety that is perhaps a bit more than for your standard child, whatever a standard child is. I do my little finger symbols. You can't see.
I can see them. They are there, people.
Moving away from school, I was thinking, actually, Dr. T put a comment, the transition from school to college and into adulthood.
Yes. That is a really interesting, because it's a horrible transition. I have to be honest. It's probably the worst that I've ever experienced.
Yeah.
There you go. I have no advice on it.
I've thought about this after it was asked, and thought, actually, because I've got three adult children, and we've done it very differently for each one. For my eldest, Kirsty, big girl, whatever I call her on the blog, I can't remember. Sarah, something like that.
I'm sure she won't appreciate big girl.
Well, as in the eldest, she's a big girl. What we did is we totally just took control. And she was happy to just be given options. And we gave her some options, and she took them. And actually, I end out that summer from her leaving school. She went and did the Duke of Edinburgh Gold Award, then a silver. It's a long story. And then she went to China to do some volunteering work. And actually, it was, for her, it was just, we took away all the stress and anxiety by giving her options that she wanted to do, things that she was interested in. And she took them, she did it. And from there, it was that we made the steps kind of quite small baby steps for her. For my next child, they just didn't know what they want to do. And that was actually really hard, because I didn't feel inclined to tell her what to do. And that was really difficult. And I think that transition is what they expect of themselves. actually, in some ways, I think it's managing your expectations as an adult. And I know that's something we've chatted about.
Yeah.
I kind of think, all right, now you're an adult. Because I was an adult at 16, I left school and got a job. But our children are not necessarily ready for that transition, are they?
No. I totally agree with that, and I get exactly what you're saying, because I think for me it was that expectation of when you go through milestones, don't you, as a parent, just a parent, and I'm getting fed up of hearing this phrase, adoptive parent, I've got to be honest, but as an adoptive parent, and I'm putting my fingers in the air there, I think that when we reach these kind of milestones and these transitions, we hold on to the hope that actually our children may have caught up with their peers. So
yeah,
when they leave at year 11 and they've sat their GCSEs and they've failed them all and that sort of stuff that goes with it. And what a word that is, failed them all. Anyway, that's another podcast. So, you know, like for Fraser, he went to college. And I hoped beyond hope that actually he would, you know, that summer, in the same way that, you know, between year 6 and year 7, there's that kind of growing up phase, isn't there? Because they grow tall, they grow wide. I don't know what happens to them. It's like someone's put them in bloody, you know, a pallet.
Yeah, growth accelerator. Yeah,
exactly. And I hoped beyond hope that he would do that between the kind of year 7 and then college. It did, you know, but it's the way. And bear in mind, I was someone who left school and went to college in the same year group as Fraser did. So I knew how I dealt with it. I think he dealt with it better than I did, actually, got to be honest. But I think that was the security of the education system.
Yeah.
So that's what he needed. That's what he wanted at that point. I didn't want it anymore when I was 16. I think I was probably maybe 18, 19 in my head. I was 16. He was... So he did the first year, and then he nearly completed the second year, but by the end of the second year he just wasn't ready for it. And I think that actually there is something to be said for not necessarily holding children back, but definitely having that consideration that actually they're not in the place that a normal kind of, you know, 16/17-year-old is. For college transition,
does it all, does it?
No, it doesn't. And the massive differences between school and college they're huge. They are massive. You know, he came home on the first night. He's like, "Oh, the tutor's fantastic. He swears at us." Okay, no, this is not, because that gave him then carte blanche because of his developmental age. This is my words now. This isn't, you know, anybody who's kind of diagnosed any of this. To me, his developmental age is 14, 15. So he's picking up that it's fine to swear. And getting him to stop swearing.
And now he's a grown-up.
But getting him to stop swearing at home, he's hearing it. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of effect that it has.
A really difficult impact on the whole family, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think
it's... I mean, you know, I don't swear. I'm like Mary Poppins, me, as you know. But... Yeah. You know, it's
but we do,
yeah,
so, I
it's
mean,
really
we don't
hard.
Swear around our children, do we? You know, I don't.
No.
I've always thought, I've said to my children, you use the language. If you hear me say it, you can say it.
And yeah,
it made it really simple. But that transition.
To be fair, I did say the SH1T last night from Jake.
But you were probably under a lot of stress.
I was. Because he put me under a lot of stress.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to set myself as a lofty ideal because I have slipped from that high perch that I've put myself on occasion.
Yeah.
Recently, funnily enough, since I met you. Anyway, I feel like we're bad influence anyway. On lots of people. But that is one transition that I think is really difficult, because I think it is
very difficult. And I think, do you know what? I would love to do some kind of research around. I just mentioned that word. Does she listen?
She does listen.
Oh, God. I would love to do some research around the transition of kind of from high school to further education for adoptees, because I think that would be really interesting in terms of how they deal with that first couple of years. Yeah, the outcomes. So how many of them actually finish? So, you know, they might do the first year because the GCSEs haven't been great, so they've managed to get on a lower grade course. who then goes on to the second and third year and then drops out. Because I think that's not a transition conversation, but no, I think that'd be really interesting.
Transition. It's this transition into adulthood, because I think that we, as a society, we've changed that transition. You know, I left school and I had a summer, and then one day I went to work at 16, you know, the 5th mm-hmm. of September, 1987. And literally...
Just repeat the year again.
1987. I started my internship.
Okay.
And my parents, I left as a child and I came home as a man. My parents trekked me as an adult. Even though I was 16,
trapped me.
And I think but that option is actually not there for the vast majority of children anymore. And that was the same for a lot of my peers.
You're right.
We were expected to be adults. And I expected that for my children. So that transition for me has been really hard to manage. And I think Paul and I, it's caused a lot of tension between us, because I've kind of said, they're adults now. And she's gone, but we need to kind of keep our, and I was going, but they're adults. They need, and you know, so in some ways that transition, they're kind of oblivious to it, because they've been given the keys to the cookie jar. They're adults, they've got what they wanted. I'm not necessarily able to function into some of that, but actually that transition for me is one that I still struggle with. And my children are into their 20s now, and I still struggle, because I kind of think I don't want to be parenting them like their children anymore. Mm-hmm. I want them to be adults, but actually I need to be more involved than I feel is appropriate, you know, but actually that's what they need. And so it is a constant tension, that transition. I keep saying the word transition to justify the podcast being called
There's a couple of things in there. So you went to work in 1987. I was at primary school. That's the first one. And tret isn't a word. Treated is a word.
No, I was tret nicely.
Tret is not a word.
Tret is a total word.
It is not a word. It's not a word. It's a Norfolk word, because I hear Tris use it all the time. And it's obviously a word up north as well. I've never heard it. Anyway, if you agree with me, then tweet me. If you agree with Al, then don't tweet him. Tweet me.
Just take quiet.
Yeah, exactly. But no, you bang on that. And Tris and I have that same issue day in, day out, because at the minute we've got a specific child who is no longer in education, but he's not in any job. And it's that kind of transition to adulthood, isn't it? Where you say, actually, you're an adult now, you're 18, so therefore we are not going to be paying for this and we're not going to pay for that. And then, you know, we watch him around the house and he's still 16, 17, he's just not ready for this adulthood malarkey, even though he can go out and drink me under the table on a Saturday night, which is not easy, but he can do it.
But can also go out and get a £10,000 credit card.
And this is the issue, you see. This is exactly the issue. So it's a massive issue.
Yeah, and that difficulty is that then when it all goes wrong, you're expected, or you want to step in, but you can't because they're adults. Anyway, we're
a bit off. Yeah, but that's transition to adulthood, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, other people, I think it's a... No, I had one question about from Now We Are Six, Who Shall Remain Nameless. I'll not
dive. Well, you've just named
them. Yeah, and actually talking about how do you you know, when you've got transitioned to short notice, and she was using an example from her blog where one of her children sort of had an accident, and all of a sudden things have got to change. You've got to move really quickly and start. And I think that's really difficult, isn't it? Because I think you've probably had circumstances where you've had to think everything's changed, and that the minute we move off the path that we've set out, spend a long time saying this will happen, then this will happen, and we expect you to do this, and we expect you to do that.
Yep.
And then we go, no, the train's delayed.
Yeah.
And I don't know about I don't know about Jacob, but my children don't do delays. To cause anxiety.
Yeah.
What's going on? Who's going on? So I think that's a really hard one, isn't it? Because life is not... We try to lay out tram lines for our children so we can smooth them through these transitions, whether that be
transition to school or to grandma's or from home to the play area, and then if something goes wrong, you get stuck in traffic or you get a puncture and it all unravels. So mm-hmm. what do you do? Come on, Scott, what the heck do you do?
I'm not answering this one because I have I have massive frustrations with that. I really do because I get pissed off about stuff. Oh, I can't say that.
Can
I say pissed off? Oh. Okay, well, I just said that. I get frustrated about things like that as well. And, you know, I'm one of these lovers of change. I love change. I love, to do different things. I love moving from thing to thing, probably my short attention span. But I get very frustrated. I get frustrated sitting in traffic. I get frustrated when things aren't on time. I'm a timekeeper. I need to be there at this time. And
yeah, but you don't turn aggressive, do you? No, you, but do you know what I mean? For our children, that can be...
Well,
you might get touchy.
I get touchy.
Yeah. You're not going to confess to losing it. Awkward silence.
No, that's all. I lose it without caffeine. So, you know, don't mess with me in the morning before I have my cup of coffee.
Exclusion zone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's like I wear a kind of shield for a moment, but I think actually what we need for me anyway, what I do is I always look into myself first before I react to these kinds of things, because what I like to do is think, right, how would I deal with that situation? It's very fast. I mean, it's like nanosecond kind of thoughts that go through my head. It's like, how would I deal with it? Okay, I'd probably be a bit peed off as well. So it's to kind of react in a way that actually minimizes the issue a little bit, but also kind of
acknowledges
has a bit of empathy for it. So it is, I mean, God, you know, there are times where I could actually just say, you know, just go over it and suck it up, sweet cheeks, because, you know, that's just the way it is. But actually, you have to kind of take a step back and go, well, okay, how would I have dealt with this? You know, if it had been me, and, you know, I do think we have to sometimes, even though we're not from the same kind of backgrounds as our children.
We would, yeah.
On the whole, I mean, you know, majority of us have come from a kind of secure base and, you know, have good attachments and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's looking inside ourselves, I guess, and kind of reacting in a way that we would acknowledge as either right or wrong.
No, I think you're right. And I guess the difficulty is that if I'm trying to think of an egg situation, you're driving along and you get a puncture. Now, my immediate reaction, you're frustrated and I'm maybe a bit anxious and I'm thinking, oh, how the heck are we going to sort this out?
Yeah.
And actually, it's at times when I'm anxious or I'm not firing on all cylinders that's when my children's behaviour seems exacerbated and it makes me less therapeutic. Is that the nice way of saying it? Less therapeutic. I'm not shouting and shouting at your kids, stop shouting, you know, but you're shouting, I'm not shouting, you know, and you kind of get stuck into these horrible cyclic sort of downward spirals where you... Your anxiety. So I think when things happen really quickly and unravel, then that impacts on your ability to deal with change and those transitions or things that happen quick. But I was thinking as well, I mean, there's lots of stuff there. Some really good comments where people sort of talking about actually even the transitions home from school. People are talking about actually supplying your kids with grub, you know, food. It's a great distraction. Mm-hmm. It's a great comfort.
It is.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, as you've said that, you've just wolfed back a glass of...
No,
Chardonnay. You broke up slightly there, but never mind. We'll be fine.
Chardonnay.
And I think that sometimes we just have to give our kids what they need at the right time, and it's knowing them as well. I know that for Flossie, actually, food is a great source of comfort for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not a particular, she's not a greedy child. She's not looking for food all the time. But if I stuff a cupcake under her nose at the right moment,
or in her face,
in her face, yeah. I was thinking about well around transitions as well. Another point that sort of came out was that our children often come with, we've kind of grouped adopted children as just a collective group, but within that there's all kinds of attachment issues, trauma related developmental delay or just trauma related kind of impacts, ADHD, autism, the whole gamut of stuff that adopted children can kind of come with. And all of that impacts us significantly on children's ability to manage transitions. I'm not sure. I feel slightly frustrated about with my ability to answer the questions, actually, because I'm not sure. I think it's just even acknowledging that transitions are just a huge issue for some families.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And I think that it's really difficult. You know, in the same way with Katie, the last podcast we did, we were unable to answer all questions in a way that may have. And I think that actually I've had some realizations since we did the CPB We Are Family event that actually, as peers, so as adoptive parents who support each other day in, day out, sometimes we just don't have the answers. And that's really hard to accept because actually I want to have the answers for everybody and I just don't have them in a lot of ways. And especially where there's diagnosis, if they're, you know, and I'm by no means saying that anybody's diagnoses aren't real, but I know, you know, for us that some of the diagnosis that Jacob comes with has nothing to do with that diagnosis. It's more about the trauma that he's experienced over, you know, his early years. But I really respect and acknowledge the fact that, you know, we don't have the answers to everything. And I think that it's about finding those answers and being able to inform each other. That's where actually our, you know, that's the purpose of this podcast, isn't it? It's to be able to inform others in a way that actually we don't know everything. Actually, people feed back to us and they tell us.
We don't know everything.
No, we don't. Thank God, because I think my head would have exploded by now if I knew everything that we'd been asked since we started your podcast, or 24 episodes again. But yeah, exactly. But you know, it's true. It is true. And I think that, you know, we acknowledge that, I think. But only recently we've acknowledged that because actually, you know, that's just the way it is, isn't it?
It's not a definitive episode on how to manage transitions. I think, you know, the principles are preparation of yourself, preparation of your child.
Self-care.
Sometimes things go wrong, and well, often things go wrong, and you've got to just roll with it. And I think it's building up that resilience. And if in your head you know stuff's going to be tricky, that's half the battle. Is that you know,
preparation for yourself? I think is quite key as well. I have to be perfectly honest. You know, you have to prepare yourself for these transitions. excuse me. It's all very well thinking, oh well, the school will, you know, announce who the teacher is going to be in 3 weeks' time. But actually, what preparation are you doing with your child to kind of get them to that stage where they know that actually this is coming? Because they know it's coming, but actually, you know, is there something you can be doing, you know, rather than depending on these?
That's a really interesting point, that, because I was just pondering that the other day about actually how so many adopters have sort of made themselves experts in their fields, you know, who've they've kind of said, actually, no one's going to sort this out for me. No one is going to, or the help I'm getting just doesn't cut the mustard. I am going to have to take control of the situation, and I will.
Exactly.
And we were with Elaine and Amy the weekend, and we were saying that actually, the amount of times you end up realizing that the person who's sat in front of you knows less than you. This happened this week. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a genius by any stretch of the imagination, but
I am.
A professional said to me, "What do you think the issue is?" And I went, "Developmental trauma." I said, "I'm not even going to beat around the bush." And because they looked at me and they said, "Well, are you? What do you do?" And I went, "Well, I'm a social worker," but I thought, you know, that means nothing. Don't get me started on that. I've dug enough holes for that. Actually, there's so many parents, you know, and the whole thing about developmental trauma, I tweeted out an article I found the other day, probably my most retweeted tweet I've ever done, 28 retweets, which is a lot of retweets, 28, on the idea that developmental trauma has been misdiagnosed as ADHD. I'm not I'm not in any way
ADHD. And I don't either. But
actually, that really rings a bell that, you know, as I've talked to professionals, I've gone, oh, it's this, it's that, it's the other. And I've gone, yeah, but you, what about this? And they go, there's not a box on me form for that one. Yeah, all right, well, we'll take the box, we'll take that one. But we just do what we have to do, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, yeah. And that is true because, you know, there's so many, I don't know. I wonder eventually whether we'll go past this kind of stage of thinking, okay, there's diagnosis here. I'm not saying that this is absolute rubbish. I'm really not saying that. But what I'm saying is
speak freely, and you can be shut down or not.
Will we know eventually? Will we know that actually it's to do with trauma? It's nothing to do with, you know, ADHD or this or that or the next thing. And, you know, there's a list, isn't there? You know, they call it labelling, and I use labelling with my fingers in the air. You know, will there become a time where actually we just say, actually, do you know what? These kids have had a shitty time. Oh, I've just used another swear word. Oh, my days. Oh, yeah. I'm such a rebel. Oh, terrible. not on the podcast. We didn't do that. But will there become a time where actually we just acknowledge that this is an issue, because actually what these children have been through is just, you know, it affects them. It just affects them. That's it. End of story. There's no label. Don't get me wrong. I get the health bits and I get all that sort of stuff, you know, with FSD, because that's specific, isn't it? You know, if someone drinks through pregnancy, terrible, say, that is a result. Exactly. I get all that. But actually, there are some things, you know, and we've got this ourselves as our family. You know, we've been diagnosed with things that actually I don't think are there anymore. And the reason I don't think they're there is because the treatment hasn't worked. So, you know, it kind of makes you think about that. And, yeah, you know,
but
I guess
the symptoms are still there, aren't they? You're still living with those specific symptoms, and you can, you know, depending on the lens that you look through, you can fit the symptoms to probably a range of different conditions or diagnosis.
Yeah.
And I think that we've always been really cautious around diagnosis, and just mainly because I'm pedantic. I don't want to drop a label on anyone. I don't want to kind of say you are this. And you know, I'm the sort of person who won't do the Briggs-Myers test. I can't bear it. I can't bear the thought of, you know, the personality test.
No.
Winds me up.
Because you don't have one.
I was looking at zero. What's zero? They go, oh, you talk to but I think that it's just so unfair to kind of hang this around just a child's neck. But increasingly, I'm changing my opinion, because I think that if I kind of just say, oh, well, this is a child who struggles, people go, oh, you mean you're a bad parent? And they go, no, this is a child who struggles. Whereas if I say, oh, this is a child with ADHD, or this is a child with autism, or X or Y or Z, or, you know, even saying, you know, it's got a reactive attachment disorder, which I think is so rare. I mean, I hear it so many times bandied around, reactive attachment disorder, but it's like one in a zillion. You know, but people grow into their diagnosis. You know, they sort of fill them out, and you kind of go, but actually, it makes sense for a lot of, you know, you can go to a school and say, this is my child, and this is the issue. But if you just go, oh, this is my child, and they sometimes get anxious, they just look at you and go, you're just a permissive waste of a parent. You know, I've had that look where people go, you're just soft. What this child needs is. Until you go with a letter that says, this child is this. I'm ranting now, aren't I? And I'm way off.
You are, and we've gone way on transitions, definitely.
We've transitioned past transitions.
We have, but I do wonder about this stuff at some point, because I think that maybe we need someone who's more kind of
more clever than what we is.
Yeah, exactly. In it.
I know, how is it working, this podcast, without an expert? Well, it's like two middle-aged men.
Yeah, I know. Well, actually, do you know what? That is what I'd be interested to hear. We get feedback on it, don't we, on the podcast? But actually, I'd really love to hear what people think of the guests and things, like proper feedback, you know, like proper, not just maybe like, oh, that was great.
We should give
Do you know what? You know what? We should do a survey month. That's what we should do.
Oh,
how,
We'd get Stalker Nails on the roof.
Stalker Nails and Laurie should be there as well. Yeah. They'd be holding hands. Yeah, and if skipping, Paula, skipping together. Yeah.
If Paula learned to use Twitter, she'll tell me frankly what it was.
Well, yeah, she does. She's very good. She's very good.
Yeah. One thing I was going to say, and yeah. I'm just cutting across you, is, and it is a really good thing for transitions, and it's for general care. And it just dawned on me. It's something from Bruce Perry, Dr. Bruce Perry, and one of his colleagues. And it's called Mobius Care.
Say that again.
Mobius, M-O-B-I-U-S, Mobius Care. And it's called, also known as Tylan Grout. And it's a model of kind of planning out children's lives to aid with transitions and to aid with the rough moments. And a friend of mine used it. She's a foster carer. They used it with a child that they're working with. And she really struggled with transition and change, a lot of anxiety. And what they did was they were moving house. And so they basically, the Mobius Care, you map out a child's life in 15-minute segments, Monday through to Sunday. And you write in who is responsible, who is kind of mindful for that child, and you do it with a child, and you say, who, you know, this is who you can go to in this, on this moment, on this day. And it kind of builds a picture of that child's care, whether they're at school or whether they're at home, who's responsible when they're at home, who's responsible at tea time, after tea, bedtime. And they built around this, especially around this transition from their old house to the new house, they totally mapped out for this child. And actually, it went like clockwork. A child that was, she was very, very challenging in the sense of living with incredible anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, the full Monty. And actually really helped her through just by mapping out with this child, this time on Tuesday, we will be here. And one thing they did for moving house, which was they visited the house a few times, they travelled past, they spent some time in the neighbourhood. They also, they said, right, pick the colours of your new room. And the child had picked their new room. And literally, as they moved in, they got a friend to spend the whole day with that child, the friend who the child knew, spent 8 in the morning, late at night. And the first thing they did when they moved in, literally the men were moving things in, and they were in that child's bedroom decorating the room. And that child went to bed that night in a room that was decorated for them as they decided. I mean, that's gold standard, isn't it? You know, I would never do that for my kids. that's a terrible thing to say.
that should be available on the ASF.
I can give you her details. She's very, I mean, fantastic commitment. And which is in stark contrast to this stuff with the foster carer this week. What do you think about that?
Oh, don't even get me started on that. I'm really, 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 really angry about all that. Really angry. Because it's not even news. It's not news. And if it was the other way around, it would not be news. I'm telling you that right now. And I think actually our friend, our lovely friend, Suddenly Mummy, she actually summed it up in her blog. She's bang on. She's absolutely bang on, because this would not be an issue. This is actually the press promoting racism in my eyes. And I said I wasn't going to even comment on it about 3 seconds ago, and I'll just comment on it. Yeah. But that is just absolutely blimmin' ridiculous. It's not even it's not even worthy of newsprint.
No.
It really isn't. And someone got paid to write that. That really boggles my do that.
And
so,
it's knocked fostering back, and fostering's kind of wobbling, and it just knocks
it
fostering
is,
back.
Yeah, exactly. And we have, you know, these negative stories do not have a positive impact. And I feel, actually, do you know what? I've since, you know, because it's just flashed up while we've been recording this, that the judge had directed that the child should go back to grandparents. And so they've been removed from that foster carers. But imagine how those foster carers must feel, regardless of the outcome. I'm just shameful.
Doesn't it turn out that the child's grandparents are non-practicing Muslims? You read that?
Don't know. I didn't see that.
But... It's just sensationalism. There's not.
I do tend to steer away from that sort of stuff. I read that and just, do I agree with this? No, I don't. Okay, I'm not going to read anymore.
I felt the same. I thought I can't even, the tone was enough for me. Because actually, if it was statements of fact, then you go, oh, well, that's interesting. But it was the tone and the whole premise of it, really. You just thought, actually, this is out to create a headline, not raise an issue at all.
Exactly.
And it's been used as a bandwagon, which many unsavory types have got themselves on the back
of. Exactly. Yeah.
Hey ho. Anyway, I think we should maybe start to think about wrapping up. What are you doing?
We need to.
Yeah, we need to. We're banging on for an hour now, aren't we?
Yeah, we have. Yeah. Crikey. And people will be, actually, if they've listened this long, then well done. You need an award.
Maybe we should set up an award. We should ask First Production to have like a humouring us award. Maybe. No.
No, I don't.
You've gone quiet. You've gone
different. I didn't even find that funny.
Did you not? You're a funny man. Well, anyway, so what have you got planned? Yeah. Are you back to school next week? When does Jacob go back?
Well, like I said earlier, you obviously won't miss. I'm a single parent for the next 2 weeks, and we're doing back to school. We're doing job hunting. We're doing oldest child returning to the nest after his summer away in America. Mm. So it's going to be and my job as well. Mustn't care about the job.
Those people who pay you. Yeah, we're busy as well, putting the kids back to school and all our fun and games out in shoes. So yeah, very very busy, and hopefully we'll have a guest next time. We'll be able to find someone who can. We've talked to your friend Sharon. Did you say Sharon?
Oh, I said Sandra.
Sandra. Who's Sharon?
I don't know. Who's Sharon? Sharon. Who's Sharon?
I knew someone called Sharon once.
Well, I know lots of people called Sharon, but I wouldn't invite them on the podcast.
Well, I hope they don't listen to this.
I hope not as well. Because they've just popped in my head as well. They're like, how dare you say that? Exactly, yeah. No. Times six.
Okay, well, you started the podcast, so you can finish the podcast.
Yes, so thank you for listening. And as ever, leave your comments. We would really appreciate your blah, 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 blah. So thank you for listening. And as ever, we would really appreciate your podcast on the Podbean website, or whether it's on Apple, rate us. Because I think you can rate on iTunes, not iTunes, Apple Podcast, can you? Or iTunes Podcast. Sure you can. Anyway.
I can see the BBC actually ringing now. The BBC.
I'm telling you now. This seriously, we are destined for Radio 2. We're going to replace Jeremy Wallace Chisel, I'm telling you.
We could do the New Mallon Sue.
We could do the Bake Off. Could you imagine us in the Bake Off?
You should do a little skit at the Adoption UK conference of a Bake Off. You and I. What you should do is set up a false balcony at the Adoption UK, and you and me could be like Wade Orphan sat like the Muppets and just sit up there and comment on the people speaking.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, so thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Just give me the thumbs up when you're pressing record, and then I'll go on.
I've done it.
Oh, have you? Oh, because you can edit, can't you? Because you're intelligent.
Yeah, I am intelligent.
You are.
I've got a BTEC certificate in computer studies.
compose.
It's a certificate in computer competence, no less.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, what was that, 1980?
1989 it was.
Oh, okay. Fabulous. I was in my first year at high school.
You liar.
So, well, I was so.
Mm. Yeah. They held me back at primary for about 5 years.
Podcast extra.
Boom. Anyway, I've pressed record.
Oh, compose. Cough, splutter, all the rest. Right, ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.